Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by our front office insider live and in the flesh, in person, Amin Alhassan. This is amazing.
I'm back.
Look at that.
Look
very
at this.
Far. You're back, but you're very far away.
I know.
That's all I'm saying. And look over there, it's NBA champ Kendrick Perkins.
My guy.
Perk, we miss you here. We can feel you, though, across the miles.
Yes, I'll miss y'all.
Coming up on the show, with Daryl Morey now president of basketball operations in Philly, what should be his top priority? We will ask someone who once worked for a front office a little later in this show. Who could that be? But first, they say everything's bigger in Texas, and the Rockets have sure taken that to heart as one of the NBA's most larger-than-life teams. Big stars, big trades, big numbers stuffing the box score, big talk, some big failures. Really, the only thing that hasn't been big recently is their lineup, which was so small it made, well, big news. So it's not a surprise to see the Rockets mark this offseason with one of the league's biggest shakeups. In a two-week stretch, they've replaced both the head of their front office, Daryl Morey, and their head coach, Mike D'Antoni, two of the sport's more notable experienced names. Stepping into their places, new GM Raphael Stone, and now, according to our Adrian Wojnarowski, Stephen Silas. Personally, I think this is a great hire. Silas is simply as qualified as it is possible to be as a first-time head coach. He comes straight from a job as the Mavericks' lead assistant. He's the man that Luka Doncic credits with helping his jump into hyperspace this past season as Dallas put together the best offensive rating in NBA history. Silas, in fact, has two decades of experience working with some of the sport's top names. He's also an Ivy League graduate who, thanks to his dad, Paul Silas, has spent his entire life around the game and just has an extreme ease with players and management alike. It doesn't surprise me at all to hear that James Harden and Russell Westbrook both back Silas for this hire. And honestly, those are the relationships I will be watching most closely. Harden is locked into the Rockets for just two more seasons. His happiness over this next year with Silas, and to a different degree with Stone, will probably go a long way into determining his future with a franchise that itself is already in as much of a win-now position as it is possible to be, having already pre-mortgaged a lot of its assets. All of which is to say, yeah, the stakes are very high with this latest Houston shakeup. We won't know for a while if this is a great new beginning for the Rockets or the beginning of the end of an era, but either way, we know it's big, as usual. So, Perk, do you think Silas is a good fit in Houston? Is this the beginning of something there?
Yes, I love it. I think it's a great hire. Stephen Silas, to me, is a possible Eric Spoelstra in the making. This guy's a stud, a young stud. Like you said, he served over 20 years as an assistant. He's a magician with the clipboard when it comes down to drawing up offensive sets and putting guys in position to be successful, especially Russell Westbrook and James Harden. And if you look at the feedback that he was getting across the internet, guys like Baron Davis and so forth were saying, great hire, this is a great dude. He gravitates to players on and off the court. I love the hire, and not only for short term, but for long term. I could see him being the Rockets coach for the next 6 to 8 years possible, even if James Harden and Russell Westbrook are long and gone away. So I think this is a great hire. I'm so happy for him. He's a young stud in the making and is well deserved.
Yeah, no, Rachel, every year when head coaching jobs are open, we hear about, oh, I can't believe so-and-so hasn't gotten a chance yet. They've been an assistant for 4 years. This is an outrage. And I always think of Stephen Silas. This guy's been an assistant coach in the NBA for damn near half his life.
Yep.
And his name never gets mentioned. Like Perk said, extremely well-respected for his attention to detail, for his preparation, for his mastery of the X's and O's, particularly on the offensive end. But the other thing, and I think this is important in today's NBA, players like him. The days of, I don't care if my players like me, they're going to respect me, that's over. This is a players' league, and you have to have some sort of mutual respect and understanding and likability to be successful, because they got to listen to you. And Stephen Silas is a guy universally, and this is a guy who's coaching Golden State, he's coached Steph Curry, he's coached in Orlando with Steve Clifford, he's coached obviously in Dallas with Rick Carlisle in Charlotte. He's been around. He's known, he's a known commodity, and I'm happy that he finally got his chance here. And by the way, and you guys, Perk, I know you know this. Usually when we talk about a first-time head coach, you're getting a lottery team.
Yep.
You're getting somebody who a team that's kind
no
of
stars.
Exactly expected to win 20 games or something like that. This is a rare opportunity for him to walk in the door and have two Hall of Famers on his roster.
Absolutely. And the distinction you make about being a player's coach, it's actually a little more nuanced, right? Because no, you cannot be the it's my way or the highway mm-hmm. anymore in this league. But it is a balance. You have to be a coach mm-hmm. that has the respect and comfort of the players while still having authority with them, because players don't respect a guy they can walk all over. Right. So I think it's actually a harder needle to thread than we sometimes give it credit for. And by all accounts, by people who have played for him, he does it. He threads that needle. So that is really impressive, too. And I do like the fact that Westbrook and Harden seem to be behind this move, because Amin, we've talked about guys making a noise, certainly in the bubble, about, hey, there aren't enough black head coaches. No, there aren't enough black executives. Why aren't we doing more business with black-owned businesses? Well, this was a case where two stars had the opportunity to put their money where their mouth was, and they backed the young black assistant coach yeah. for the job.
Absolutely.
Which was impressive to me.
And by the way, it's kudos to the Rockets for listening, right? I believe, you know, the question was, oh, should they have taken input? Hell yeah, they should take input. When you have star players, that's the way this league works. And if you don't take their input, you better be prepared for some sort of kind of friction to happen mm-hmm. walking through the door. So instead of that, you got him coming in. Now, the other candidate was John mm-hmm. Lucas, who'd already been there and obviously lives in Houston. He's been there a long time and was well-respected and well-liked by the players. So I would expect to see John Lucas continued on the staff. But, you know, when you talk about some of the other options that are out there, I think it's important to listen to your players. And again, it's not about kowtowing or doing whatever they like, but it's about coming to an understanding that this decision is a group decision. It's not a unilateral decision from the owner.
And I know that they want to keep John Lucas on the staff and are just hoping that they can convince him to, Perk.
Well, I think they're going to keep him. They love John Lucas. James Harden loved John Lucas. Russell Westbrook loved him. The front office loved him. He is great at player development. They have mutual respect for John Lucas. They respect him and what he brings to the table. He's able to come in and voice his opinion and hold guys accountable. He could get on Russ. He could get on James Harden. And I think he's going to help Coach Silas even more and have him and make him feel more comfortable that he could walk in the film session. He could walk in the practices and hold those guys accountable without Russ or James giving him the side eye. Because we all know it's not easy coaching Hall of Famers. It's not easy coaching those type of guys. Not saying that James and Russ are not coachable, but you got to have that you got to have that security to know that you could go in there and demand your respect. And I think that's what John Lucas brings to the table.
Yeah, and Perk, I'll throw something else in there as well. If Steven Silas comes in and he's got tweaks and he's got ideas of how to make this offense better, it's really hard to walk into a situation where there's a guy who's won MVP, who's had a top five finish on the MVP ballot several times over, and a team offense that has performed really mm-hmm. well, to tell them, hey, guys, there's a better way to do this. So you need almost like an ambassador to sell some of that stuff. And that's where John Lucas will come in handy.
It'll be interesting to see that staff continue to take shape. Good luck to him. Good luck to Raphael Stone, the whole Rockets organization. It's the beginning of something. We will see what. All right, coming up on this show, Malcolm Brogdon is on the line. He's going to join us coming out of the next break. He has some awesome updates on his Hoops for Humanity project. Also, we're going to talk to him about the Pacers' new coach, when he expects next season to begin. Stick around. You're watching The Jump. Welcome back to The Jump. We are now joined by Pacers guard Malcolm Brogdon. It's always so nice to have you back with us. Happy offseason, friend.
Thank you for having me.
Malcolm, I am so interested in your Hoops for Humanity initiative. We've talked about it several times on this show. You were just kicking up with Chris Long and his whole group, and of course, the Malcolm Brogdon Family Foundation doing such good work. And when I heard you had new stuff going on, we had to have you back on. Can you tell us a little bit about the latest developments?
For sure. You know, clean water is sort of my thing off the court. Trying to affect people in the best way possible, trying to help transform lives, trying to, you know, people in the other half of the world don't have the necessities we have. So clean water, I think, is one of the biggest things to helping people live a better life, live a decent life. So in the past, you know, I had an initiative called Hoops 2.0, but now I've moved that initiative to my foundation, and it is called Hoops for Humanity. I recently, in the past 2 years, I had maybe 5 or 6 NBA guys with me. And now I have, you know, upwards of 10 or 11, and I've added a few WNBA players. So I'm super excited. You know, we're in the process of building our first well in the Padanumbe area of Tanzania. It's right outside of Arusha, where the mountain Kilimanjaro is. So we're, you know, there's a really exciting stuff on the horizon for us.
I love this. Making moves, too. I didn't even know you had made so many moves, but these are good moves, especially expanding out the NBA and WNBA circle. I mean, I know you're super interested in this project, too.
Yeah, actually, the last time when Malcolm was talking about it, I was hosting the show. He came in studio, and as I told you, I'm of East African heritage, so I want to thank you again for all the work you've done. I just was curious, though, Malcolm, with COVID and what's happening in the world, how has that complicated or how has that changed the way the charities worked out there?
Well, you know, it's harder to get over there. It's harder to see the work and the wells that are being built. But the fundraising doesn't stop. I think now is even a better time to fundraise more than ever, because I think COVID has exposed so many deficiencies we have in this country. You know, I think it's unimaginable what people are going through that already didn't have much. And I think people understand that. So fundraising has gone well. It's just really hard to get over there. But things have not slowed down. We're still making a lot of progress.
Now, Malcolm, obviously your team, the Pacers, hired Nate Bjorken as the new head coach. Have you had a chance to speak with him yet?
I did. I actually had lunch with him today,
just
a few hours ago. He was in Atlanta. We had lunch. He's going to be terrific. He's Toronto has a great culture, as we all know. A lot of bright young minds, and he's one of them. So I'm super excited to have him on board.
That's my guy.
Look at that. Breaking news. This is literally as up to date as possible if you just had lunch with the man. I love it. Of course, the next question after that, Malcolm, is when would you start playing for your new coach? You are the vice president of the Players Union.
Hold on, let me take
What can you tell us about when you think next season might start? There's certainly been reports of a push that the players wanted to go back to the possibility of Martin Luther King Day, whereas the owners would want to start closer to Christmas. I'm interested in your opinion. Where do you expect next season to begin, and what do you want?
You're
taking it down.
Yep.
So, you know, I think it's just what you said. I think those are the two options. We're either going to start MLK Day, which I think a lot of the players are leaning towards, or we are going to start, the 22nd, that Christmas time. But the huge difference is revenue. It's revenue and trying to get, you know, each season back on track to start in that September, October range. So I think calculations are being done on both sides on how much revenue would be lost for each potential date. And, you know, we'll have to come to some type of agreement and go from there.
There's a deadline tomorrow. Adrian Wojnarowski came on our show yesterday, and he said that he expects that deadline to possibly be extended again. It's been extended several times. Do you expect it to be extended again?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the way talks are going, this is a complicated issue. There's a lot to balance. A lot of minds working on this collaboratively on both sides. So, it's going to take some time. And, you know, I don't think a few weeks, but I think it'll take at least a few more days.
Hey, Malcolm, look, man, I want to say I appreciate everything that you're doing in the community as a young leader, as a former player and a former NBA vet. I'm proud of what you're doing and what you bring it to the table. In my selfish ways, I want the season to start. I need Christmas Day games, right? But I want to talk about what you're going to do this year on the court, right? I'm a huge fan of yours. I want to know what you're doing to prepare yourself to take that bigger step in your game and be that number one, number two option and put this Pacer team on your back and carry them like I know you can. What are you working on? What is your team expectations? What are your expectations going into next season?
For sure. No, I appreciate everything you said. For me, a big piece of me is being healthy. My only fully healthy season has been my rookie year. And then the past 3 years, I've, you know, sat out of 15 to 20 games. So that's really hurt me, and I think that's really hurt my team. But then the second piece is, man, making shots. You know, this league is all about making shots. It's all about shooting that three ball now. And I've been an excellent spot up shooter in the past from the three ball. But now I'm not playing with Giannis. Now I'm not sitting on the perimeter waiting to get an open shot. I'm having to create. I'm having to create for my teammates. I'm having to shoot tougher shots off the dribble. So that's what I've been working on. and shooting the ball from range. I think shooting the three ball consistently this season will be the difference for me.
Well, Malcolm, you hearken back to your rookie year. You're not saying it, so I'm going to brag on you for you. You won Rookie of the Year the last time you played a full season. So, yes, we would all like you to come back healthy and play a full season again right. Because there's a lot we have seen you can do. I want to say again, I know that we have so many young leaders in the NBA right now. It's almost an embarrassment of riches of you guys going out and doing so many projects to help our community here in America, all the voting efforts, but also abroad and overseas. It doesn't, though, go without saying, this is just really exceptional. What you have done personally, what your family and group has done, and what all of you around the NBA, the under 25, under 30 set in the NBA, they're coming. You guys are a serious force to deal with both on and off the court. And it's just really fun to talk to you about that. Hoops for Humanity, all y'all have Google out there. Go look it up. It is a really worthy project. Good luck with that well next month. And Malcolm, we'll see you back on the court soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Malcolm.
Awesome. All right, guys, everyone else out there coming up, there are reports that the Clippers are interested in Rajon Rondo. Perk has been saying this for weeks on The Jump that he thinks this is a good fit. So we will evaluate. Stick with us next.
The future.
Let's talk about the Clippers. Clippers fans may have been sad, too, after the way their season ended. Can they do the Arthur Blank thing? The battle for L.A. already heating up again for next season after a stellar postseason in which he helped the Lakers win a championship. Rajon Rondo expected to turn down his player option and test the free agent market. Now, the Lakers are, of course, interested in re-signing him. But according to Mark Stein of the New York Times, the Clippers have interest in signing Rondo as well. Mm-hmm. We all know the nickname Playoff Rondo by now. Mm. But let me just say it. It is a real thing. Increases his stats in scoring, assists, field goal percentage, three-point percentage in the playoffs consistently. You, of course, have to take regular season Rondo with Playoff Rondo if you sign him. But he definitely had his moments during this regular season, too. You have been calling for the Clippers to make an offer to him on this show for a month, Perk. Why do you think do a little lobbying. If you were going to lobby your good friend, Rajon Rondo, why do you think this is a good fit for him?
Rachel, listen, Steve Ballmer and Lawrence Frank, if you knew better, you'd do better. You'll be at Rondo's front door. The Clippers are missing a leader, okay? Kawhi Leonard is not a leader. He's a hell of a basketball player, but he's not a leader. When you look at him when he played with
leader.
The Raptors, Kyle Lowry was the leader. He was the vocal leader. Mm-hmm. And when I looked in the bubble and I watched the Clippers play, Kawhi Leonard had to do too much. Doc Rivers moved him to the point guard, and that's not Kawhi's style. You need a guy like Rajon Rondo, who's the ultimate floor general that could get guys into their spots. He puts the key in guys' back. We have that saying in the locker room, when you have a leader that could put that key in the guy back, like especially Paul George, and get the best out of him, be able to run sets for him, call sets for him on the court to get him going. They need Rajon Rondo like old people need soft shoes.
Soft shoes? What? Sometimes I don't get these Perkisms. Sometimes
I don't fly over my head. That's excellent.
I won't lie. But I'm going to say this. Perk's absolutely right. You know, usually when we talk about...
You see what happens when you get old. You're going to need soft shoes, too.
What do you mean when I get old? I'm old right now.
When were you born? What decade?
Stop it. Yeah. So the when we talk about vet leadership, teams needing vet leadership, usually we're talking about young teams, right? Mm-hmm. But the Clippers needed vet leadership. That collapse happened because they didn't have a Udonis Haslem to tell them to get their heads out of their you-know-wheres and hunker down to business. And Rondo is that kind of vet. That's exactly what they need. Because like Perk said, Kawhi is a lead-by-example guy, and that's great, but sometimes you need a little bit more than that, and it needs to come from a place of authority and a place of respect. No disrespect to Paul George, but you can't play the way he's played and then get up and talk because people don't want to hear from him. And so Rondo, as a guy who's been there and done that in several places now, that's the kind of voice that resonates. But then there's a basketball reasoning, and Perk talked about it as well. He's a point guard. Yeah. This team does not have a pure point guard. It was one of the worst passing teams. They ISO a lot. He's a guy that could get them some easier buckets just from a basketball standpoint. So Rondo to the Clippers, that's a match made in heaven as far as I'm concerned.
I'm really interested, though, if this turns into a bidding war because with the Lakers, they have certainly seen the value of Rajon in a playoff and finals situation. And Anthony Davis specifically told me before the NBA Finals started this year, when he got traded to Los Angeles, the first person he called was Rajon Rondo, saying, I need you on this team next year. The comfort level with Rondo is off the charts with Anthony Davis. And remember, when AD hit what is probably still the biggest single shot of his life, right? That shot, the go-ahead Kobe. Three-pointer, right, where he shouts Kobe at the end in the game against Denver. Guess who got him the ball, right, at a time where he asked to check himself back into the game just for that purpose and make the right basketball play when everyone else was expecting the ball to go to LeBron James. I think there's high value for Rondo on the Lakers, and I expect to see a little bit of money thrown around on both sides. We'll have to see who wins. All right, I want to go from the West to the East. New Sixers president of basketball ops, Daryl Morey. We discussed in the news yesterday of him signing with the Sixers, the difficult roster construction he is now in charge of. Take a look at what Morey Ball looked like when he was GM of the Rockets. The threes were reigning in Houston. The Rockets led the league in three-point attempts for, it felt like forever, but it was the last four seasons. We aren't saying the Sixers will necessarily play the same way those Rockets did. However, there is clearly work to be done to a roster that finished last season last in field goal percentage during the playoffs. So, Amin, what should Morey's top priority be? What do you think for the Sixers?
You know, Rachel, a lot of people are going to think about, oh, is it trade this guy? Is it sign this guy? His first priority is to sit down with Elton Brand and get on the same page. Because Elton Brand's a guy who, you know, didn't have full control of that situation in Philly. He was doing a lot of executing of ownership vision. And this offseason was the first time they were letting him do his thing. That's why he had a couple big hires, like my guy Prosper Karangwa from the Orlando Magic. He was starting to formulate his plan moving forward, and then this Daryl Morey thing drops. So Daryl has to walk in and reassure Elton that his opinion matters, that it is not just kind of, hey, you're old news, especially in an organization where this has already happened several times, where someone's in control, and they say, you know what? We're bringing this guy in. He's going to be in control now. And so I think that's really important, because what you want is you want a cohesive front office. If you don't do anything about it, if you avoid this elephant in the room, you get a situation at best where maybe someone's not really that bought in, and at worst, acting against you. You don't want that. You want to get Elton in the fold and remind him, hey, man, we care about what you think. We care about your opinion. You are a vital part of this organization.
Well, one thing they do have in common, Amin and Rachel, is that they're both aggressive. So that's already a good thing. That's a good starting point from the jump. I expect Daryl Morey to be aggressive this offseason. Will he trade Ben Simmons? Probably not. But I do see him trying to get off of maybe Al Horford contract. I think they will keep Tobias Harris, because Doc Rivers loved Tobias Harris. We have to remember, when Tobias was playing for Doc Rivers with the Clippers, he was playing some of his best basketball, all-star level. Doc didn't really want to trade him. And so when I'm looking at Daryl Morey, he's going to be aggressive. He's going to make sure that their bench gets better, make sure role guys get better. And we all know he's going to add shooting to this ball club. He's going to add shooting. He's going to go out there and find some shooters. I wouldn't be surprised if Al Horford and Josh Richardson be involved in trades this upcoming offseason.
Yeah, and I think an important thing to say is that a lot of people are like, oh, Daryl's going to do what he did in Houston. Daryl did what he did in Houston because that's what was available to him, and that was the easiest way for him to build with what was available to him. He's going to find what works with these two Hall of Fame caliber players, these two All-NBA caliber players. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. And so how they played in Houston isn't necessarily how they're going to play in Philadelphia.
To me, if you look at the consistency and the through line with Daryl, it's his creativity, right? The creativity in terms of deal making, where he really made some unique strides in all of that and changed the way some of those deals are done around the league. And the creativity in how to stack role players around your best players. That is where I sort of think we will see a repeat of what he did in Houston, not how he did it, but the approach that he did it with. I do expect him to go look for more shooting, not just because OG Daryl Morey likes three-pointers and shooting, because anybody who has watched the Sixers for the past 2.5 seasons would say that team needs more shooting. Right. And by the way, when you look at Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and the question everyone keeps asking, boy, can they play together? Just look at a few seasons ago when they were surrounded by shooting, when they were on the court together, they were plus 15 instead of like minus one, I think they were this past season. That is all about the roster around them. It is not about those two guys and can they play basketball together. They're not the best fit ever in the world, But I don't think there's any question that given another crack at this roster, Daryl Morey, Elton Brand, if they can find the financial flexibility to bring some other guys in, if they do, we will see an improvement with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid being cohesive as well. Can't wait to see it. It's going to be good. Here's what The Jump recommends for today. Can't wait for this either. Now on ESPN.com, the first of a six-part series inside the political donation history of wealthy sports owners. Now, our Malika Andrews, who contributed to this project, will join us after the break to discuss the article, read up, and get ready for Malika when we return.
About to put some people on blast.
At this time, I would like to welcome in Miss Malika Andrews. I have missed your face, bubble friend. Very happy to have you with us.
I know.
This is nice. We need a glass of wine,
it's but good
we'll,
to be back.
We'll get to that later in the afternoon. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, just saying. Before the break, we mentioned exactly the ESPN.com project tracking political contributions of owners across all sports. You have been intrinsically involved in this. I just want to know what led to this idea and what were some of the findings of the research that did and did not surprise you?
Well, I think like so many things, it just started from a place of curiosity. We know that people like to stick to sports, but we also know that sports and politics are inextricably linked. But we really wanted to know to what degree, what numbers can we actually pull? And so why not start at the top, start at the wealthiest, start at the owner? So what we did is we took 160 owners across 125 teams in the MLB, in the NHL, WNBA, NASCAR, NFL, and of course the NBA, and we examined over the last 5 years since 2015, what have their federal level donations looked like? And what we found is that $47 million over the last 5 years, these owners have contributed, right, to different politicians. And we found that overwhelmingly, owners donate towards Republican politicians. And in 2020 alone, what we found is that $10 million went towards Republicans versus just $1.9 million towards Democrats. And in the NBA, we thought that this information became even more appropriate, even more important when players, when we saw the Milwaukee Bucks go on that wildcat strike, as you guys all saw, and then the outcome of that was to ask for more support from owners. And what ended up happening is owners said, okay, we're going to donate $300 million, which is a ton of money, over the next 10 years towards causes that you all think are important that will help towards racial equality. But remember, at the same time, this league that we think of as so socially progressive, we also know is overwhelmingly Republican in terms of the things that they donate towards. And oftentimes what we're seeing is this sort of stalemate where we knew wealthy folks tend to skew more conservative because those people, those conservative politicians, tend to pass certain laws that helps the wealthy stay wealthy, right? Mm-hmm. So there's sort of this interesting catch-22 going on here where folks are asking, mostly black and brown women are asking ownership, hey, we want backing and we want financial support. But at the same time, what this data shows is that how much support can they actually give if on their in their personal lives, they're also donating to causes that in many ways actively oppress these things these men and women are looking for. I will point out that the one league that did not skew Republican in terms of
Say
the causes
loud.
They donated towards was the WNBA. And that did not surprise me, Rachel.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me playing 14 years and playing for the Boston Celtics and the Oklahoma City Thunder in particular. Those owners are great. They're great individuals. I'm looking at Wick Grosbeck, Steve Pagliuca, James Cash, Clay Bennett. They have great hearts. I talk to these guys like, you know, once a week or twice a week on the telephone. They're great friends of mine. And it's a sticky situation, and it's hard to judge any person on who they vote for or why they're voting for a certain party. I mean, because it's confusing. I mean, us watching, and not to get in the political state, but watching the presidential debate, it confused me. Well, to the point where it was like, okay, I want to vote this way, I want to vote this way, but I'm confused right now. So I don't look at them any certain type of way. because I know that they have a heart of gold. I know that the Boston franchise in particular, the ownership group, are doing a lot of things in the community, and they have a lot of things that they plan on doing in the near future that's going to benefit and back the players tremendously. So, you know, I'm looking at this situation, and I just know that hopefully they're doing the right things for the right reasons. So I can't judge anybody whether they vote Republican or Democratic, long as their heart is in the right place when it comes down to in social justice and equality in America.
Right. Well, and to your point, Perk, what we found, what a professor, Josh Kalla at Yale, told me is that oftentimes people lean one way or the other politically and have ideals that maybe are different from what the party line is going to be. So for instance, an owner, like maybe the Boston Celtics owners that you're talking about, can fully believe or come to believe that Black Lives Matter, that gay people should have the right to get married. But what often happens is incredibly wealthy people will rank, perhaps, and not saying I've talked to the Boston Celtics owners, but will rank importance in terms of, we're going to donate this way, even though we hold this social cause to be a value of ours, we're going to, in terms of where we spend our political dollars, we're going to value the party that maybe helps with how we view money a little bit more than the party that perhaps more aligns with how we feel about gay marriage or any given social issue that you might come across.
Malika, I know you mentioned the WNBA is the most, I guess, progressive-leaning ownership groups. Where does the NBA rank within the other sports leagues as far as where their ownerships lean towards? And was there anyone within the NBA ownership who was, I guess, aggressively donating to one side versus the other?
Yeah, so what we found is that the NBA, in terms of the total money that they have spent over the last 6 years, they've spent the second most money after the MLB in terms of how much each ownership, all the team's owners actually donate. So the NBA is the second most in terms of how much money they donate. They are also overwhelmingly Republican, more than 50% in 2016, 2018, and 2020. In 2020, 20 owners across all the sports I just mentioned have donated directly to PACs or to Joe Biden. 13 owners across sports have donated directly to Donald Trump's campaign. In the NBA, there are three owners that have donated directly to Donald Trump. They are Dan DeVos with the Orlando Magic, Jim Dolan with the New York Knicks, and Tilman Fertitta with the Houston Rockets. And then for Joe Biden, what we found is, like I said, 20 owners across sports donated to Joe Biden, although it was a fraction of the amount of total money. $1.7 million total was donated to Donald Trump, and just over $400,000 total was donated to Joe Biden. And the owners from the NBA that explicitly donated to Joe Biden were David Blitzer with the 76ers, James Dinnan and Mark Lazary with the Milwaukee Bucks, and then Peter Guber with the Golden State Warriors.
Right. Well, Malika, that's so interesting. I love hearing that breakdown. I also really like the point you made about prioritizing, and I think this is the crux of the issue. I've had people come say to me, well, you're not saying that all owners have to be of one political party or the other, and of course they don't. That's not what this is about. What this is about is, if you make your money off of the talent and work and labor and sweat of people who are overwhelmingly in this league, black or brown, you need to pay more consideration and attention to where you then spend that money that you have made off of them, and prioritizing their needs a little bit more when you make that calculation of priorities. That is what players are asking for. Do not use our labor and sweat to then back causes that hurt our communities.
Preach.
And it's just, I think it's that simple. It's not the overwhelming, you have to think this way, you have to support that candidate. That's not what players are asking for. They are saying, the money you make off of us should not be going to causes then hurt the people that we love. School lunches getting cut, all kinds of community projects that are affected by some of these politicians that these owners are donating to. So I think that's where the push and pull is. I know it's easy to make it much more politically charged, but it's actually about that. And I know in the coming days, you guys are gonna dive deeper on a bunch of subjects. What is next for this project? What can we expect tomorrow?
Well, I'm really excited for the next piece that's coming out, June Lee's piece. He really dove into exactly what you're talking about. what the perception is of each league in terms of what they put out, whether it's in the NBA having Black Lives Matter on the court, wearing things on their jerseys, for example, and then behind the scenes, sort of what the push-pull is there, the perception versus reality of how progressive these leagues actually are. So I'm really excited for that piece. Then Ramona Shelburne and I are diving into the NBA specifically and why they chose this nonpartisan push to vote as the initiative that everyone wanted to get behind in an election that so many people think is potentially the most important election and certainly one of the most contentious elections that we've ever had, certainly in my lifetime. But to your point, Rachel, this project wasn't to, I've had a lot of questions of why do you want to expose people?
Right.
The point is that more information is power. And to equip, whether it's players, whether it's fans, to understand who they are rooting for, do their values necessarily align with yours? And if they do, that's great. But it's not a judgment on whether or not or what these people are donating towards. It's just to arm people with more information so that when maybe the next time they say stick to sports, they're understanding that this is so much deeper than that line that's become so popular over the last couple of years.
Yeah, telling LeBron James or some of the other athletes in the NBA and WNBA, stick to sports, don't say this thing that someone's upset with things that these guys say or do, they should be also telling owners donating $47 million, as you point out, to stick to sports as well. The truth is, none of us can stick to sports. This is one of the most important times in our country's history. And Malika, as usual, we thank you for being so smart with so much insight about how it's affecting our sport and affecting us all. We will see you again soon. Coming up in this show, we're going to have an NBA draft edition of Crunch Time for you. What's most impressive about Georgia's Anthony Edwards? That, and Perk's got his draft sleepers next.
Can't wait.
On the Jump. Tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern, ESPN2 will have the pro day for Georgia's Anthony Edwards and Kentucky's Tyrese Maxey. Both are projected lottery picks with rumors of Edwards possibly going number one overall. Tune in for that. And with that, it's a draft day edition of Crunch Time
Crunch
here
time.
On The Jump. As I just mentioned, Anthony Edwards been at the top of many draft boards since the start of 2020. Amin El-Hassan, what's the most impressive thing about him?
Oh, we're looking at it right now. He's an incredible athlete. He's driving. He's attacking. He played it for Tom Crean, so did Dwayne Wade, so did Victor Oladipo. Some maybe flashes there.
There we go. All right, Kendrick, we're 20 days away from the draft. We've covered the lottery pretty extensively. Give us your late round sleepers. I know this is one of your favorite parts of this time of year.
I have one. His name is Joshua Hall, 20-06-9 stud out of North Carolina. Listen, this kid is a Brandon Ingram in the making. And look, he won't make an immediate impact this season, but in the next two seasons, next two or three seasons, we will be talking about this kid. He is phenomenal, Rachel. He can score a majority of ways. He's long,
take notes.
He's athletic. Joshua Hall, I'm calling it right now.
All right, I got it down here. Perk said Josh Hall.
Perk's got it. I mean, you have a lot of notes today, so that's all good. Perk is going to be dropping knowledge on the draft all the way up to November 18th, so look for that. Thanks for watching. Jump is back tomorrow. Paul Pierce might be in a Halloween costume. We'll see.